The immune system, like I said, it's like your drunk friend in a bar. She's trying to protect you. And she's getting a misread on what's dangerous. And she's just not seeing clearly. That's the phlegm. And so she's throwing punches, she's trying like hell to protect you. She's trying like hell to give you a human experience.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Cheological. I wonder what these episodes produced and aired during the early days of COVID-19 are going to sound like in 2 years. You know, like looking back at the clothes of the 70s and the hairstyle of the 80s. Are we going to look back with a sense of nostalgia or that feeling of, oh my God, I can't believe it looked like that? Does it seem to you like right now everyone's got something to sell you, something to get you through this time? Seems to me the signal-to-noise ratio on the internet has become even more jumbled. Lots of people are touting their solutions. Experts all have their opinions and methods, usually with some kind of product or service as well. In a time of uncertainty, it's natural to try to normalize life, and it's easy to grasp at something that might be a solution simply because we think it will staunch the bleeding. The bleeding of the money leaking out of our businesses, the bleeding away of a sense of certainty and trust in the world, the hemorrhaging of what had been normal into what seems like an endless well of fear, anger, panic, and worry. It's easy and perhaps very human to look for solutions that are outside of ourselves, especially when we don't know how to navigate the territory we find ourselves in. But I suspect that this is actually the perfect moment to reflect more deeply on what it means to be a Chinese medicine practitioner. This is a moment to know for ourselves what we know, really know, not just about the medicine, but who we are as students of this art. I was talking with a friend the other day. Her practice evaporated in the space of a few days. Then she found herself doing what she could to help frontline healthcare workers secure protective gear. She said to me, if a Chinese medicine doctor cannot work in her clinic, then she needs to find where she can be helpful. There is always something for us to do. I've got a buddy, he lives in one of the red states, and he's working on a project to provide frontline staff with herbs and supplements to help keep them healthy. He too sees a problem as an opportunity to help. It's easy to see the problems in this moment of time. What's more of a challenge is seeing the opportunities that we have to help. It might not be with our usual or favorite methods, but as doctors and as creative people, there are always ways that we can help our communities. Just don't expect it to look like what you usually advertise on your webpage. We may not have the same opportunities right now to do acupuncture, but we can still help this world by seeing through our Chinese medicine eyes and allowing that to inform our actions. In a moment, we're going to get into a conversation about treating Hashimoto's disease. Heidi Lovey is the gal you want to have next to you in the bar fight against Hashimoto's. Lots of good information coming up here, and trust me, there's some sciencey science in here too. Heads up, it's anything but boring. I got a couple of things that I think you'll find of interest first. Y'all are at home reading more books lately, right? Oren Cavitti, who will be teaching the Ontake Moxa in Motion class in early May, is making his new book, Moxa in Motion with the Ontake Method, available to Cheological listeners on Amazon for just $12.99. In the next 2 days, April 21 and April 22, it's a screaming deal on how to use this clinically fun and effective method. Go get it before the price returns to $30 and start practicing this stuff on the folks that you're locked up with. They are going to love you for it. And if you'd like to get this method into your hands from Dr. Moxa himself, Cheological is live streaming Oren on May the 2nd and May the 9th. If you love Moxa and you love bodywork, you're going to really enjoy using Ontake. Details are over on the Cheological website. Take a look under the courses menu. Cheological comes to you in part with support from Lhasa OMS. Lhasa knows that successful practices require ongoing study and learning, and so in addition to providing you with everything acupuncture for your clinic, they also bring you thought tools like Cheological. I've got a message here from Carl Schwartz about how you can stay up to date with text notifications on products that you're interested in so that you'll know as soon as they hit the shelf.
The impact of COVID-19 is being felt around the world. Hi, I'm Carl Schwartz, Lasso MS's Chief Customer Officer. We believe we are better when we work together. Thanks to the operators at our manufacturing partners who make the countless supplies and supplements you depend on, these goods remain in adequate supply, and Lasso MS is in turn able to serve you, the practitioners. If you'd like to be in the know about new inventory, text us and we'll share the news as shelves are stocked. Simply text SUPPLY to 855-358-3253. That's SUPPLY to 855-358-3253.
All right. I don't know about you, but trying to understand thyroid issues from the conventional medicine perspective has been rather elusive for me. It's a complicated endocrinological organ. Let's get into this conversation with Heidi that will not only help you better use Chinese medicine to treat thyroid issues, but you're going to better understand the Western medicine piece of it as well. This is a fun and fast-paced episode. Buckle up. Heidi Levy, welcome to Cheological.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. And I'm super excited to talk to you today because we're going to talk about thyroids.
Love it. My favorite topic.
How did thyroid get to be your favorite topic?
By absolute accident. In this profession, we have things we like to treat, and we have things that we hope to treat, and we have things that we're very good at because we know them intimately. So I was diagnosed with thyroid disease at 18. I probably had thyroid disease since 11 or 12. And so I kind of went through my own harrowing journey with it because that was the 90s when I was diagnosed, right? So best I could do was I remember at 18, I got a call from the internist who this panicked call because it was my college physical. And it was the first time my thyroid had been tested for the physical. And called and was almost like screaming through the phone, you have to come back in, you have to get on Synthroid immediately, this is dangerous. And at 18, you know, you don't really know your ass from a hole in the ground around health. You're just whatever. So I didn't take the meds, and at 5'1", if you stretch me like on a rack and hang me upside down, that's as tall as I'll get, I was 240 pounds on eating anywhere from 800 to 1200 calories a day. My body was just a wreck.
Did you feel like a wreck at that time?
I felt like a wreck. But this is the thing, though, right? Because I had probably been sick from the time I was a child. I didn't know what healthy felt like.
Right. This was your sense of normal.
That was my normal, mm-hmm. right? So I was like, oh, it's totally normal that you can't remember words and you have to make them up. It's totally normal that you need 17 hours of sleep on the weekend. It's totally normal foggy thinking and just all of it. But I'm just going to like buckle through and just do it because that's what we do, right? Like I'm from the Midwest, right? So it's like, that's what we do in Minnesota, that farmer thing. We're going to do it. So what happened is I did part of my undergraduate in Japan and I wasn't done with the experience. So I went back to teach English in Japan. And that's when I first actually had an encounter with an acupuncturist.
Now, were you taking thyroid medication at that time? Were you
not like half-heartedly? Right. Yeah. Like when I remembered, yeah. right. Yeah. But you know, like thyroid medication takes a little while to settle in. So because I was taking it haphazardly, I would take it and I wouldn't feel any different. I was like, well, why the hell am I even taking this? Like, what's the point? I don't want to be on medication. I don't like medication. Like the idea of being on medication for the rest of my life. Like, I don't want that. So I was snowboarding quite a bit and, you know, my weight dropped to maybe like 190. And this was when I was snowboarding 4 days a week on a Japanese diet, ooh, running nice. Uphill.
Yeah. Snowboarding in Japan.
I mean, it was amazing. And a friend pulled a hamstring and I was like, all right, dude, see you at the end of the season. You're done. And he was back up and running with us in 2 weeks.
That got your attention, didn't it?
Totally got my attention. I was just like, ding, 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 ding. Wait, what is this? And he said, oh, come meet my acupuncturist, this guy named Kuribata-sensei. And so Kuribata-sensei had a house in the middle of a rice field, and the front of the house was his clinic. You'd go to the clinic, and then the back door of the clinic was the front of the house. So there are three of us that would take appointments at the end of the day and then just go have dinner with him and his wife and hang out. And he was
the singularly most delightful, sweetest, just
energetic. Like, you just wanted to be with him. You just wanted to be in his presence. And so I just thought acupuncture was like voodoo bullshit. I was just like, I don't even know why I'm coming. I'm just coming because I like this guy. And I like hanging out and I like speaking Japanese. All of a sudden, doing acupuncture, my thyroid started behaving.
Just acupuncture.
Just acupuncture.
With this extraordinary guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My thyroid started behaving. My weight started coming down. My cramps cleared up. During rice cutting season, I'd be in bed for a week because of my allergies, because of all the dust kicked up. I was totally fine. And I was just like, oh, wait a minute. This is what people feel like. This is what it feels like not to be like exhausted and tired and sluggish and, you know, kind of all the things. And then I moved back to the U.S. I moved to New York right after 9/11. And great time to move to New York, but literally the month after. And I wound up working for a Japanese tea company. And within a year, my health crashed. So I found an acupuncturist.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
And within two sessions, right, my thyroid was ticking again. So it was almost like muscle memory. Then I was at the company and I was talking with a colleague. And she said, you know, it sounds like you have what I have. Go see my endocrinologist. So I saw the endocrinologist and he sonogrammed my throat and he said, oh, you have classic Hashimoto's. And I started crying. Like, I started crying and he's like, why are you crying? I said, because I have a diagnosis, which means I have something to work with.
Yes. I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy. And he's like, you got to do Synthroid. I was like, I don't, something's not sitting right with this like Synthroid racket.
You said, hang on a second. I'm going to ask about that racket, Synthroid racket. Tell me more about that. I mean, we're going to get back to your story here, but I'm curious to hear about the racket.
So what the racket is the standard treatment for thyroid disease hasn't changed in over 50 years. It's hormone replacement is what it is. It's not technically an HRT, but we're going to call it an HRT. So it's hormone replacement therapy.
It's kind of an HRT.
It's kind of an HRT mm-hmm. because you are replacing, you're replacing T4. In the mid to early 20th century, the replacement that they were using was porcine thyroid. Armor was kind of the standard. Whether or not like you want to be taking like dissected pig, I consider it an herb because herbs are plants, animals, and minerals. And so therefore, dissected thyroid does fall into that herbal category for us. But so they were treating it with armor forever. Now, the thing, and this is something that I talk to patients quite a bit about, is that there's a huge difference between T4 and T3. The way that I describe it, I'm sorry if this is redactive, right?
No, well, you know, I mean, I suspect that there's a bunch of us that don't quite know. It's like patients come in, they got this thyroid thing, we studied it a little bit, we know that there's thyroid-stimulating hormone, there's some other stuff, it's complicated. Oh my God, I just hope they respond to acupuncture, you know?
I'm going to give you like the elevator speech, right? And we'll get back to the story at some point. But the way that I like to think of the endocrine system, it's like a company. So anyone that's worked in corporate can understand this, where the pituitary, it's like the CEO and the COO. So it's the pituitary's job to have that future vision for the company. Who are we in the world? Where are we moving to? The 5-year vision, the 10-year vision, like where are we going and how are we interacting with the environment? And then the rest of the endocrine system is kind of middle management. And so how it speaks to middle management is through a hormone feedback loop. Now, if we bring this into our medicine for a second, blood, how much water is in blood? Blood looks like water, it acts like water, it moves like water, but it's in the fire category because it's communication.
And it's red.
And it's red. But this communication piece is how the body communicates to itself. Heart is communication. Fire is communication. And yes, it's fire and water together, but it's that fire piece to it, right? And so how the CEO is going to speak to middle management is through this hormone. So it's like email, right? And so anytime you see SH, stimulating hormone, TSH, FSH, whatever that is, that's the volume at which the CEO is having to speak to middle management.
Mm-hmm.
So if the volume's cranked up and he's fucking screaming, it's like, well, yo, slow your roll. Why are you screaming at me? So if the TSH is kicked up and like the CEO is just having like, pound into middle management, it's because middle management can't hear it, because middle management maybe is a little sluggish, or middle management's having to deal with a fight over to the side, mm-hmm. and it literally can't hear it.
They're distracted.
Totally distracted.
We're totally working on some other stuff here.
Yeah, like, sorry, yeah. boss, I hear you, whatever, right? So it's that hormone loop. What TSH does, what the CEO does to the middle management. Now, it's middle management's jobs to make sure that the direct hires have the materials they need to work to run the company. You got the stuff you need for your job? Good, yes, bad. What do you need? So one of the biggest things we need to run human LLC or, you know, human dot corporation is thyroid. It's a type of gasoline. What happens with the thyroid is that T4 is stimulated. Now, about like 85 to 90% is T4 that comes out of the thyroid. Only about like 10% is T3.
Mm-hmm. So the thyroid's job is to produce T4.
Mm-hmm. For the most part.
In essence. It's one of it's like its main product.
Yeah. And so, but T4, it's like if I gave you a bag of snacky snacks, like full of Kind bars, and it's like 8 a.m., I'm like, here are your snacky snacks. Don't all eat them in one place. Great. Go have your day. Take your snacky snacks. So you got your snacky snacks, right? You have your Kind bars. Yeah. And you're out. And you're just like, I'm hungry. So you pull a snacky snack out.
Yeah.
And the first thing you have to do is open it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's T4 to T3. T3 is the snacky snack.
T3 is the snacky snack. T4 is the wrapper.
Yeah, it's the wrapper. It's like you have, well, that's like one analogy. It's not a perfect analogy, but it's a package, right?
Okay.
And so this unwrapping or this opening or this conversion happens mostly in the liver. It happens mostly in the gut, a little bit in the brain, and a little bit in the kidneys.
Mm-hmm. So liver's a big player.
Liver is a huge player. Gut is a huge player. As much as I can go into functional medicine with this, we're acupuncturists. And our medicine can actually contain this. And when we look at it through kind of like our theory, right, this conversion, you need liver qi to do it. You need spleen qi to convert. And if you don't have liver qi or spleen qi, what's going to happen? You're going to have this downstream impact of liver blood deficiency. And then, you know, it's going to hit liver yin deficiency. And so the school of thought that I come from with this, where I'm really rooted and where I've seen the biggest changes is the Pi Wei Lun.
Mm-hmm.
Li Dong Yuan like nailed this shit. He fucking nailed it.
Thank you, Li Dong Yuan.
So the number one herb that comes through my practice is Buzhang Yi Qi Tang. However, like I need to caution. I need to give big caution in that one of the mistakes that I see students and practitioners make is patients come in and they're like, oh, they're tired. I'll give you Buzhang Yi Qi Tang. But they're not diagnosing according to pattern. They're diagnosing according to symptom.
Well, we know that's a problem.
It's a huge problem in the field. So there's corrections that need to be made with it. But a lot of autoimmune and, you know, whether it's Hashimoto's or Graves or MS or lupus or, you know, CDC's got over like 108 autoimmunes listed as like formal autoimmunes, right? The one thing that they all have in common is inflammation. But it's chronic ongoing inflammation. So it's this kind of low grade damp thing going on. Now, if we come back to the Pi Wei Lun, remember that the five element structure that he used, it predates that kind of like pentagram star that we use. So the five element model that he used is Earth is in the center.
Right. And then you've got north, south, east, west.
Okay. Yeah. But let's break this down even more. Like if we break this down even more, it's so cool. Earth is in the center. Fire is on top. Water is below. We have wood on the west to the left, if we're facing this, right? And metal to the east. And it spins. So this is a very poor two-dimensional model of a four-dimensional phenomena because we have the dimension of time. And so this is actually moving forward, the spinning, right? I swear to God, I'm going to come back to thyroid. This plays into thyroid 100%.
Yeah, no, I'm
okay.
Yeah. So. I love the journey we're going on here.
Okay.
It all makes sense.
It makes sense.
It's like, well, that makes sense.
Okay. All right. So, but this is the kicker, right? So what gets the circle to spin? Well, spleen goes up.
Snacky snacks. That's snacky what gets to spend. Yeah.
Well, yeah, snacky, you always need snacky snacks for a bicycle ride, okay? So imagine that this circle spinning is like a bike wheel.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then in the center of the bike, of any single bike, you have the pedals, right? That you have to like move. So spleen goes up, stomach goes down. That friction between that movement of earth is what actually gets that five elements model to spin. Oh. You need the friction of earth, right? That's why earth is in the center.
Earth and it's, spins the whole process.
It spins the whole process. And it's this like glorious dynamic between the spleen and the stomach that do it. This up-down friction that gets the whole thing to turn. Okay? So now in our model, in Lee's model, what happens when the spleen goes down? Number one, the whole thing stops spinning.
It gets soggy and cloggy and boggy and the stomach doesn't go up either.
Nope. Nope. So both of them go down, but that soggy, cloggy, boggy crunk winds up dripping into the water access. So now we have like damp and we got crunk and we just got like crap down there. Mm-hmm. It's a slow drip, right? Mm-hmm. It's like mold. It's like mm-hmm. a slow drip. Mm-hmm. But remember, we have the Ming Mun. Mm-hmm. So the Ming Mun's kind of like burning next to it. But what happens is the water is going to try and shunt like some of this crunk off to the liver, because that's the cycle that it spins. It's going to like put it into the west. Now the liver is going to get stagnant.
Put it in the east.
Yes, put it in the east. Thank you.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this backwards in my head. So, but it's going to shunt it off to the liver. Okay. And it's going to be just pushing this crunk. So the liver is going to slow down.
Because
it's full of gunk, which means that the heart at the top, it's not going to get the nourishment it needs from the liver. But then what happens is the Yang Ming sets this whole shit on fire, right? So you have this like fire that comes up through the earth into the fire. And now you have like, so now not only do we have spleen qi deficiency, kidney yin deficiency, kidney yang deficiency, liver qi deficiency, liver blood deficiency, we also have heat harassing the heart and the lung is choked out from this. So we're going to have lung qi deficiency. It's a clusterfuck. It is a clusterfuck because the spleen went down.
Li Dongyuan came up with this whole idea of yin fire.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we're talking about.
This is exactly what we're talking about.
This thing, the fluids come down, the spleen qi comes down, you're kind of smothering, smoldering, mm-hmm. and everything just gets wonky.
So you have this low-grade burn, and like everything gets choked out. So the patient presentation of this is a hot mess. And it's usually women. I consider thyroid to be a feminist issue.
And why is that?
Well, last time I looked at the numbers, it was like 43 million people like suffer from thyroid.
It's way more women than men.
In over like a decade of doing this, I've seen two dudes.
Any idea why is this? Any sense why this is the case?
Well, I mean, my two yen regarding it would be that a female endocrine system, it's like a Lamborghini. A dude endocrine system, it's a little bit like a Toyota Corolla. Like, it's just like, it's a different operating system, right?
Okay.
And so because of this endocrine system that we're cycling faster than men cycle,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a call and a response.
And if it's not tuned up, it's not doing its thing.
It's not doing its thing. Okay. And so because of menstruation and, you know, how the endocrine system is fine-tuned to that and what it's reading, I think that the endocrine system, like women just tend to be a little bit, what I see, right? A little bit more sensitive to environmental triggers.
And they're more sensitive to emotional triggers too, just because we're kind of wired differently, you know? And then there's the cultural stuff. I mean, women do tend to be more sensitive to a lot of things than men.
Well, okay, but also let's be clear. Imagine the form that we come into. The human form that we come into, when a form that's molded by estrogen versus a form that's molded by testosterone.
Totally different, right? Patternings.
They're going to be different patternings,
yes.
but there's also, you know, going to be like just a different form. And I think like in that yin, right? So if yin roots yang and, you know, yang like holds yin, right? Things tend to proliferate and okay, I'm not being straight with this. Let me give another example. So foo organs,
mm-hmm.
bags and tubes.
Bags and tubes.
Bags and tubes, that's right. It. Bags and tubes.
Yes.
right?
And they're kind of second class. It's like, well, you can kind of do without some of these tubes. You can often do without a lot of the bag. Yeah, that bag, we can get rid of half of that bag, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. But yin organs, you know, the Chinese character regarding yin organs, it denotes storage. And it denotes storage of something precious. But, you know, if you have a precious bag of rice and a little bit of mold gets in there, the whole bag can get moldy real fast. Yin just provides like a little bit more breeding ground for kronk, right? And so when you're residing in a form that has an endocrine system that's been molded by estrogen and the call and response, because of menstruation is different, the receptors are just going to be much more sensitive to things than if you're in a form that's been molded by testosterone.
Yes. So is this why so often thyroid issues look like yang deficiency? Because what you're just talking about, we've got this yin. Things can kind of get moldy or gunky with that. What helps with that? Some yang to move.
Kind of.
Can be useful.
It can be, but this is the issue. It is a yang deficiency, because let's come back to the snacky snacks, all right? So T3, it's gasoline to run off of, right? So we have the T4, and we have to be sure that we're converting into T3. So we always look at the gut, and we always look at the liver to make sure like those guys can actually open the T4. T3 is just one form of gasoline. Now, if you don't have that gasoline, you're not producing it, or you're not converting to it, the next gasoline that the body actually self-produces is kidney yang. So you're going to tap into the kidney yang, and you're going to blow your kidney yang. Okay, now once you blow your kidney yang, what the fuck are you going to do? What you're going to do is you're going to do anything that converts to something that looks like yang. So you're going to do the caffeine, the carbs, and the sugar. And then you're going to blow the spleen out even more. And around and around and around and around and around and around we go. And so because there's this constant need and looking for like gasoline for the system to run, because we don't have like that primary gas, like the good gas.
So you're looking for what you can get to burn.
You're looking for anything that you get to burn, right? And so then, you know, from like a Western functional standpoint, it's kind of like adrenal fatigue. It's like leaky gut. It's like, you know, this whole thing. But because the immune system's like looking this way, because it's under attack, the back door is open. So what we often see with thyroid presentations is secondary infections. So we see things, especially in the Northeast here, we see things like Lyme's disease, we see Bartonella, we see EBV, we see herpes, we see other viral loads, we see cytomegalovirus, we see like all this other stuff because they're opportunistic.
You know, this is something I was wondering about. Sometimes people don't feel well, they don't know why they're not feeling well, they come in with other issues. And one of the questions in my mind is, well, is there something going on with the thyroid that's allowing for these kinds of things? So it's very helpful to hear this, that there's these secondary opportunistic things that show up.
So, but what happens is, as the practitioner, you can get diverted, right? So
it's very confusing.
It's super confusing. So what happens is we come back, let's come back to this antique five element thing I was talking, like this antique five element model, right? Of like a hot mess walking in, because like spleen is blown, kidneys are blown, like heart's not getting anything, it's being harassed, lungs just shot, like liver's all congested, right? And now you got like Lyme, cytomegalovirus, maybe a little bit of heavy metals for shits and giggles, right? And it's just like, as a practitioner, you're like, whoa.
Where do you start?
And so a lot of practitioners, they wind up either symptom chasing or pattern chasing. Because remember, like, we're organic, dynamic beings. So anytime we come in face-to-face with a patient, we all have like 3 to 4 patterns at any given time. It's just which one is percolating to the top.
Or which is the one that we as practitioners like to treat. You know, it's kind of our bag. We like to treat X, Y, Z.
Yeah. And so the practitioner starts playing whack-a-mole with it, right? And it's just like, whack liver to you, like, whack this, whack this. And the patient, it's like this... things don't change. Okay, so let me tie some of this in together, like in from the previous conversation with rackets and all that. Okay, the racket regarding like Synthroid, like it's nice, right? Because it suddenly gives like the patient some juice, some T4.
You got some snacky snacks.
You got some snacky snacks, right?
And they're readily available snacky snacks.
Yeah, and so what happens is then you take the blood, right? You take the blood and it's like, ah, I looked at the blood and it says you got enough snacky snacks. And your CEO is like, calm down. He's not screaming at you. Mm-hmm. And
got that guy off our back.
I got your guy off your back. Your blood works good.
Shut the hell up.
Yeah. And your patient's like, oh my God, I'm still like, I'm not sleep like 18 hours. You're like, I'm so exhausted. I can't think.
Oh,
I'm
so
totally
they
symptomatic.
Still feel awful.
They still feel awful. They still feel like garbage.
Even though the blood looks fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all had patients like that.
Yeah.
My doctor says my blood looks great. And it's like, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that I agreed to do this podcast is I kind of want to get the message out that it's not a TSH game. It's not a T4 game. It's not a T3 game. It's not a hormonal replacement game. The blood work's not being tested correctly. They're not testing the antibodies. What happens is you get tested once, you turn up positive for Hashimoto's, and then the doctor's like, well, you got this autoimmune, fuck off. We're not like testing again. Once you got it, you got it. Sorry. But now listen. Like LabCorp versus Quest, they use different numbers for testing.
Can I ask you a question about this?
Yeah.
Okay. Western medicine is supposed to be super objective. We got these tests. This is that. They got different tests that have different results. How come there's different standards? How come there's not one standard?
It's because of the labs they're using. And it's the sensitivity of the equipment. Like another good one is Lymes. You can get tested for Lymes and have a lot of false negatives. But there's only two labs in the U.S. that actually test appropriately for Lymes, where they test for banding.
So you have to know what
lab. You have to know what lab to use.
Do conventional doctors recognize this as well?
Some do. Yeah? Some do. Okay. The younger ones do, where I find that I come up against the most resistance with things is old school endocrinologists. We're like, fuck you. The TSH is fine. They're on Synthroid. I'm not redoing the antibody levels. And then I wind up, like, I've gotten into, like, pissing matches with them because I'm like, look, on the lab values that you're using. So there's TPO and there's TGAB. And so it's thyroid peroxidase versus thyroid globulin. And they both have to do with the thyroid, right? And what you need to know in this context to make it easier is one is an enzyme. TPO is an enzyme that resides in the thyroid. TGAB, thyroid globulin, it's a protein that resides in the blood. And both of them have to do with thyroid hormone production. So what Hashimoto's is, it's antibodies that attack either the enzyme and or the protein. So a blood level reading, I think like LabCorp uses 34. So a TPO number under 34 is no autoimmune. A TPO number over 34 is Hashimoto's. Now, I am here to tell you that a TPO number of 80 versus a TPO number of 800 versus a TPO number of 2000 are three clinically totally absolutely different presentations and are going to be different experiences.
So it's not just a yes, no, you got it, you don't got it. There are different presentations depending on what those values are.
It's the veracity of it. And one of the things that I tell patients is like, yo, like your Hashis versus my Hashis versus her Hashis versus their Hashis, like our lab values, it's just a data set that tells a story. Right? That's why I love data. I used to work in a bank and I could sit in Excel all day. I get these big fucking data dumps because I could tell stories if you know how to pull it. Blood work tells stories.
If you know how to pull it.
So I often tell patients like, please go get the proper blood work because we're going to be able to look at it, not because I'm going to be doing Western medicine. Right? I'm a Chinese medicine physician clinician. That's who I am. But I love the blood work because it tells a story and it tells me the flavor of their Hashis. It tells me the flavor and a little bit more of the experience. So if somebody is coming in and they're on their 10th goddamn miscarriage and they're just like, I've been to the doctor, like everything's okay. I'm like, give me your thyroid blood work. And their TPOs are sitting over 800. And I'm like, we got to get your antibodies like below 100. You're getting pregnant, which is cool, but you're not holding the pregnancy. So it's not like necessarily like a kidney Jing issue. It's not that. It's a different issue. So we get the antibodies under 100. baby, 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 baby. No problem. So the subjective experience, like what this really is it's not hormone replacement. It's an antibody fight. It's a damp heat fight. It's a damp toxin fight.
Which is back to what we were talking about earlier.
It comes back, right? It comes back to the spleen.
Back to our antique five-element model.
Yeah.
And the spleen cheese sinking.
Yeah. So the only non-negotiable that I ever do with, you know, because I think like everybody's, it's hard being human. Being human's a bitch. Like I tell my students this all the time. No, I'm coming back as a gay man's Pomeranian named Coco. Like I've got this whole reincarnation plan. It's going to be fabulous. But, you know, it's hard being human. And so I'm willing to negotiate most things with patients so that they can be compliant. Because I'm more into compliancy than I am into like my way or the highway, mm-hmm. right?
You want to help them in the way that they're willing to receive the help.
Wherever they are. Mm-hmm. So, but the only non-negotiable, the absolute only non-negotiable with Hashi's is gluten-free. It is the only non-negotiable. If they're not willing to go gluten-free, I actually won't work with them. I refer them out. And it's not that, like, listen, gluten's not bad. I fucking love gluten. I love gluten. And there's a reason I called it the Fertile Crescent, right? Like when the wheat grew and it's just like it fed the masses and we saw shifts in society and culture and growing and, you know, all of that. Every time like high levels of protein are introduced into the mass population, we see a culture shift. We see a civilization shift. Gluten's awesome. It's a protein. It's super cool, mm-hmm. right?
And
super yummy.
Tastes great bread.
I love my croissants, right? However, there is a protein in gluten called gliadin. Now, if I were to write, like if I were to do like Minority Report, right? I were to write out like the protein chain gliadin, it would be like ABC123. If I were to write out the protein chain for thyroid, it would be ABCXYZ. So what happens is if it's when your immune system is primed, it's like it's in a bar fight and it's a little drunk and it's like your best friend drunk trying to protect you. ABC, I know you. And then it goes and punches it. So what winds up happening is the more ABC is in the system, the more antibodies get released.
And the more antibodies, again, and around the circle goes.
Around, 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 around.
So the idea is to reduce the antibodies if you can.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Mm-hmm. And we can do that. We can do that.
Okay.
100% we can do that.
And so partly the deal with this Synthroid racket is, in some cases we're keeping, in many cases we're just attempting to keep, a dysfunctional system continuing in its dysfunctional way.
Mm-hmm. And
but with enough snacky snacks that you can hopefully get by.
Yeah, and that's what they do, is like they get by. They get by. And there's also like, you know, and this isn't something that I've seen written in the literature too much, but like when I've talked with other clinicians who work with thyroid, there is definitely like a profile. There's definitely like a profile to like who shows up with Hashi's. I was at a dinner party, I don't know, like a while ago, and somebody was like kvetching about their sister. And they're just like, oh, you know, my sister, like, she's got like two kids. She's super exhausted because she never says no at work. She's working like 85 hours a week and like her home is immaculate. Like it's perfect. The kids are like, you know, A students because she helicopters. She's always with like the kids, but she has like boundary issues. She especially has boundary issues with like our mother and our mother happens to be a raging narcissist and is always like calling on my sister. And like my sister's like always putting everything down to take care of my mom. Is it starting to sound like someone, you know, right? So, and I just look over, I was like, so how bad is your sister's Hashi's? And they're just like, how'd you know? She was recently diagnosed. I was like, oh, have her come in. If you don't have enough snacky snacks and you don't have enough gasoline to run, you're going to dip into the will. Part of the profile that I see tends to be women with either a narcissist or someone with narcissist-like behavior, primary within the family, parent, sister, something. Sometimes it can be a sibling that had a really bad health condition that the whole family was focused on the sibling, right? So the sibling wasn't necessarily a narcissist, but everything was focused.
Everything was focused on them. They draw the
attention. On them. Yeah. And so the individual learns to back burner themselves. And the esteem comes from what you do for people, not who you are. So I call them plate spinners. So what happens is they start like, how many plates can I get going? Like, what can I do for you? How can I help you? Like, how can I be the best? Like, look, look, look what I'm doing for you. That's where they receive love, attention, and ego. And we all have ego. We all need ego. Like, ego is not a bad thing. But that's where they get that positive feedback. Because what would happen if all the plates fell and you're just out there with the tits hanging out? Like, you don't think anyone would love you. Because you've been groomed and primed to like do for others, and you're so exhausted, and you just dip into the well and you keep going. So these.
So we're back to looking at this kidney weakness because you've been sucking on your jing in essence.
It's taxation.
Taxation.
It's taxation. It's not a jing deficiency. It's not a pre-heaven jing deficiency.
Ah, okay.
Right. It's taxation. Now, that being said, the stereotype for thyroid used to be middle-aged women. I've treated two-year-olds. We're seeing Hashis show up younger and younger and younger and younger.
Why like do you I said, think that's the case? What's going
environment,
on
Environment, environment. And it comes back to the Piwei Loon. Treat the earth first is not just in the body. It's environmentally.
Okay. So I just want to let this sink in for a moment, because I was just listening to you talk about people pulling on their will, and I was going to kidney, and then we were just talking about it, and you go, no, it's really more taxation. It's more this earth piece. It's more this me as a person, and if I can give, then I have value. So that really is an earth imbalance more than a kidney.
Yeah, and they look for like... even little ways to give. And these are people, then if you try and give them something, they won't take it. They won't take it. But like I'm telling you, Christmas, fucking this office, Christmas, like it's like bountiful in here because all my patients are coming in and like, even if it's little things and like giving me things, right? But it's that earth, and like, which is delightful and it's nice and thank you so much. But like, But it signals more that earth imbalance, mm-hmm. that overgiving.
So you can really see this in people's behavior. You could maybe not even look at their blood work. You've been doing this long enough. You got a sense of this. You can listen to them or watch them in action, and you'll see it.
Yeah.
It shows up.
Yeah, I can usually nail it like within the first like 2 minutes at this point. Now, just for like shits and giggles, let's just throw one more monkey wrench into this whole thing. Okay.
There's already 16 monkey wrenches in here.
I know. I'm going to throw one more in, right? And then we'll like blender it up. We'll blend it up.
Put it in a blender. We got a ninja here. We're going to put it in the ninja. We're going to spin it up. All right.
Okay. All right. So now I'm really going to fuck with your head. All right.
Are you listeners ready for this? Mm-hmm. Are you following this? Are you ready to have your head fucked with?
Yeah.
So
this was actually a game changer in my practice. Okay. So what would happen is, and I think we've all seen this, and again, I'm just going to refer to this as she because I tend to treat mostly women.
Mm-hmm. Two dudes in 10 years.
And one was like, it was a byproduct of parasites. And I was like, we cleared the gut and he was fine, which is a whole other like interesting case study. But so we've all had this though. Like you have female patient, two women, right? Almost identical presentation. And you diagnose both of them with liver blood deficiency and a little bit of liver qi stagnation. Okay, fine. Pretty rote, right? So you have your herbs, you have your acupuncture, and you're treating both these women similarly. Okay, so we're going to call one Abby and we're going to call the other Betty, A and B. Okay, Abby and Betty. So Abby is super compliant. You say jump, she says how high, right? Betty is like, meh. Kind of compliant, like when she takes her herbs, she remembers. Betty is leapfrogging. You're able to discharge Betty from service within a month. Betty's fine. Abby is two steps forward, one step back. And Abby is compliant as all hell. And it's just like, Abby, what the fuck is going on? Right?
I don't know. You need to be like a contrarian bitch to make this thing work?
Yeah. Like, wait, like what? Like, what is happening? Okay. So I'll tell you what's happening with Abby. Abby has a genetic variation. Abby has a genetic variation that predisposes her to liver qi stagnation and liver blood deficiency. And also it toxes her up. So the genetic variation is MTHFR. There's, and I call it the motherfucker gene. Motherfucker A, motherfucker C. There's two of these. You get A and C, And if you think back to high school biology, you get a copy from mom and a copy from dad. Okay. So now think you have A, C, right, in the horizontal, and mom and dad in the vertical. So now we have like this grid, right? And you want to be negative for mutations in all four corners of the grid. Now, before Obamacare, we couldn't, like in New York, we couldn't test for it. Like it was illegal to test for this in New York, because if you tested positive, you would be nailed with pre-existing condition and you could be denied insurance. So New York just wouldn't even let you test for it. Okay, since we have these consumer protections, we're able to test for it. And so we're getting more and more data around it. Now, the technology is a little bit ahead of the knowledge. Just because you can test for it doesn't mean you know 100% what it does, right?
It can be there, but you don't know what its function is.
What MTHFR, ANC do is they produce enzymes that methylate, which is a very specific type of detox. And it's not like Gwyneth Paltrow, like, oh my God, I have to do like a liver cleanse. Like, this is like, no, you got like telomeres, histamines, and heavy metals hanging out in the system because you're not clearing them. It's so common that they're not even calling it a mutation anymore. They're calling it a variation. So about 40% of the population has one to four of the quadrants, like with this mutation, right? So for every mutation, your body's ability to methylate starts to decrease. So what this presentation looks like is maybe kind of a sick kid, right? Had colic. Kind of a couple of rounds of antibiotics for like strep. Maybe they had the tonsils removed, maybe not, like ear infections, you know, something would come to school, they'd catch it, right? And they tend to have like food allergies, right? Maybe not necessarily nut allergies, like a little bit lower grade, right? Oh, like if Abby eats tomatoes, she doesn't feel so good, right? She's kind of a picky eater. Okay. So then like Abby gets to menarche, like gets to menstruation. Raging cramps, and all of a sudden she's getting headaches, crazy migraines. Mm-hmm. Abby gets
this is pretty common stuff.
Common stuff, right?
Super common stuff.
Super common stuff. But like high school, Abby starts to get kind of anxious for no reason. She starts like having like weird anxiety, like kind of like insomnia start, and like the period starts getting harder. So she goes on birth control. All right, so now the period's masked.
I'm listening to you describe this. This is so many women that I see in my practice. I mean,
this is at least 40% of your women.
Super okay. common. This is super common. Common.
Super common. So, all right. So Abby gets high school and maybe they give her like Imitrex to like manage the headaches and they put her on birth control, but like the headaches don't really go away and like her food sensitivities are getting worse. And shit, now Abby's got like eczema.
Anxious as hell.
And she's anxious as hell. And now she's got skin issues, right? And she's like, where the fuck are these skin issues coming from? Like, I've got like psoriasis and like eczema. And then Abby gets to her 20s. And Abby's just like, well, I guess this is just my new normal to feel like fatigued. But like, I eat food and sometimes like it runs right through me and sometimes it doesn't. Like, I don't know what I can eat. Like, I'm getting nervous. Sounding like your patients, right?
Right. Oh, now they're diagnosed with irritable bowel.
Now they have, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now they have irritable bowel and bitch, you got some Xanax, like just for fun, right? So now like Abby's like on Xanax.
You're like,
Imitrex,
you're like a goddamn fortune
control.
Teller.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So she's on Xanax, like birth control. She's got Imitrex, but the Imitrex isn't really doing anything. So she's going to high dose on naproxen sodium and like hope that helps. And like she's tried FODMAP, she's tried keto, she's tried like all none of the diets are working. Now she's breaking out and she's got eczema. This is kind of a classic MTHFR mutation.
Wow.
Yeah. And so 80% of Hashis tend to have like I wish I don't have the mutation. Like I had hoped I did. I was like, God, that would explain so much. It's like 80% of Hashis have this mutation because what happens is since the system isn't clearing histamine loads and it's not clearing other things, you have this like histamine load backup and they're not able to open B vitamins. So they're going to appear anemic. They're going to appear like Chinese medicine blood deficient. And now like their gut's all jacked. So they're not actually pulling nutrients from food. And so you have this compounded thing that's happening. This is the one time that I do kind of lean heavily into functional medicine, where you do have to clear those methylation pathways. And if you clear the methylation pathways, guess what? Abby catches up to Betty.
Because she's able to detox and get all this crud out of her system. So really what you're doing is you're unburdening the spleen.
Yep. But we do that by, you can use a couple aminos to do it. So NLAC, what that does is it drops histamine loads in the upper jaw. Butyrate drops histamine loads in the middle jaw. And then they have to be on, methylated B vitamin complex. And that's usually where I start if I suspect MTHFR. And then of course you know what to do. Like you could eat spleen chi diet, but you make sure they're gluten free. And then they're just like, "Mine's gluten free, it's so hard." I'm like, 21 days, see what happens.
Yeah. Do an experiment. Be your own white mouse. Find out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then day 21, I want you to go to the fucking Olive Garden and order like unlimited pasta. I want you to blow the system out. I want you to have so much pasta, you're pooping noodles. And what happens is they have a gluten reaction.
And they know it.
And they know it.
And they see the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they see the relationship and they're just like, yo, gluten free. So like with Hashi's, that's the number one thing you can do. And then you go into the spleen. Now, I know other practitioners that have had great success working at like the yin chow and the yang chow level, right? Doing specific things with the ren, because the ren goes right through the endocrine system, right? There's no one way to skin a cat. This is just my experience and what I've discovered clinically. And there's other ways to approach it, but this is where I've found like a couple like clinical pearls and gems to come back to the beginning of the story with Kudibata Sensei in Japan. He was the one who told me, you can't ignore this. You can't ignore your thyroid. You can't do it. You got to pay attention to it. And it took me a couple of years. And after my kind of harrowing experiences with endocrinologists who weren't listening to me and who were just throwing synthetic drugs, I went to Chinese medicine school to figure it out. And that's what I primarily studied. And when I came into private practice, it's just kind of what I started treating. It's just what I do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were already deeply studied in it by the time you got out because of all the experience that you had before you went in.
Yeah. You know, and now that being said, I do take meds. I take Nature Throid every single day. I have no problem with it. I have no problem sharing that. I have no problem telling patients that.
What is Nature Throid?
Nature Throid. To come back again to like the racket. So Armour used to be the standard for thyroid. It used to be the standard prescribed medication, right? So like the old school endocrinologists in like the 50s and 60s, that's just what they used. And then Synthroid hit the market. Now Synthroid is just T4. If you're doing dissected thyroid hormone, be it like pigs, you know, we're like 99.99% related to pigs. So it's kind of the closest we can get to bioidentical without actually customizing it. It has T4 and T3 in a natural form that your body understands, and it's not having to work double time to convert. So what happens is when Synthroid hit the scene as something completely synthetic, there was a huge marketing campaign around it, and it was really pushed to doctors, and it was pushed in medical schools, and then it became standard, and Armour became secondary. And so the thinking with a lot of endocrinologists is, you know, if you're taking like 125 milligrams of Synthroid, every time you take that pill, it's 125 milligrams of Synthroid. If you're taking a couple grains of Nature Throid, maybe it's 118, maybe it's 130. So they're just like, oh, it's not the same dose every time. But guess what? Your thyroid doesn't pump out the same dose of T4 all the time. Like your thyroid acts seasonal, right? Your body can react to this. And so what happens is a lot of people, and I include myself in this, we don't do well in the synthetics. We do better on like the Nature Throids and the Armours, and it's a little bit of an art form to figure out like how to diagnose it.
Well, it sounds like partly art form and partly some really like know your damn science.
Mm-hmm. You have to know your science around it, and the antibodies, especially the TPO antibodies, because my antibodies raged for, you know, at least like if we say like I had it at 11. And I didn't really start doing meds until like 31. That's 20 years. Like I didn't address the antibodies, right? Those 20 years of antibodies ravaging my thyroid. So the amount of soft scar tissue in there is such as she's not going to, you know, I got to be on the meds.
Right. Yeah. Your thyroid is very compromised from years of abuse.
Now, I'm gonna give you one more gem, all right? Because I know I have to go soon, but I want to give you one more gem with all of this, okay? So the big takeaways to this is, number one, is it's not a TSH game. It's a TPO, TGAB. It's an antibody game, okay? Number two, gluten-free is a non-negotiable, absolute non-negotiable. Number three, always check on the spleen. Spleen is primary. Make sure that spleen is rocking out and see where else you have to decongest them. And number four, reach deep into your acupuncture-like toolbox and teach your patient how to gua sha their own throat and teach them how to gua sha the back of their neck. Make it part of the routine to do every night before they go to bed. I have like little bags here. I just go down to Chinatown. I get like the soup spoons for like $1.
Yeah, they're
right?
Great.
They're great.
You know what else works really, really well? Jelly jar lids.
Yeah, that's what we use at the college. That's what we use at the college, right? But what happens is when you start to gua sha and you teach the patient to do this consistently, and it's not about depth, it's about consistency. So when you teach them to gua sha their neck safely, every night before they go to bed, what it starts to do is it starts to break up the soft scar tissue in there. It starts to open up the ren. It starts to open up the dew. It starts to clear out the gallbladder. It starts to like affect the chong. It goes down to those deeper levels and it gives the thyroid breathing room and it drops antibodies. It drops antibodies. And there was a study that came out of Korea and the study was bunk. The study was crap. You read the study and you're just like, this is the worst EIP I've ever seen. But the theory is good, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So
you've seen in practice that it holds up.
Yeah, I've seen in practice that it holds up. I've seen antibody numbers drop by 75%.
Where in the hell are these antibodies coming from in the first place? What's going on here?
It's the immune system, right? So, and one of the things I like, and I dealt with this personally, and I deal with it with patients, is like, you know, any sort of chronic long-term disease. And when I say disease, I mean out of ease, right? Any sort of like chronic, like long-term thing, like there's this feeling in the sense that your body's betrayed you, that your body's gone haywire, that your body's out of sorts and you don't deserve this. And why is your body reacting like this? And it's kind of a mental game. And it took me a little while to realize that my body loves me more than I love her sometimes. And it's a huge one. It's a huge one. And the immune system, like I said, it's like your drunk friend in a bar. She's trying to protect you. And she's getting a misread on what's dangerous. And she's getting a misread because she's living in a system that's dirty. It's toxed up. Like there's too many things coming at her. And she's overtired and overtaxed. Mm-hmm. And so...
not seeing clearly.
She's just not seeing clearly. That's the phlegm. Mm. That's the phlegm. And it's the phlegm coming from the environment, right? And so she's throwing punches, she's trying like hell to protect you. She's trying like hell to give you a human experience. She's trying like hell to keep you here. And she's trying like hell to hold the system together so Shen has something to inhabit, right? But
she's taking you out in the process.
Yeah, she's taken out like some big players in the process, right? Like she's taken down the house. And so it took me a long time, you know, especially like, you know, and then you can always have like insulin, you know, you can have like other things like back up into it. And it took me a long time. Like, yo, I rock out 180 at 5'1" and I love my body. I love my body. I love what she does for me. I love how I'm able to move through the world with her. I love how intuitive she can be. I love the nervous system that inhabits it. And she's got this thing, right? She's got this like little pissy rage where every so often she goes and punching bags a thyroid. But if I take care of her and I work not to overtaxation and I stay off the gluten and I do my gua sha at night, right? And I do my meditations and my shavasanas and my movement and all of that. Like I actually technically by the blood work, I come in and out of Hashis now. I come in and out of Hashis. I still need the nature thyroid to get the hormone to get my snacky snacks, right? But when I'm behaving,
you're in a whole different place than you used to be. Totally different.
100%. Okay. 100%. I can do 14, 15 hour days now.
Holy smokes.
Which I never used.
Yeah. That's a long ass day.
It's a long ass day, but I can do it without taxation. And that's not like bragging rights, right? Mm-hmm. Not at all. Like, it still takes a lot to do that, right?
And you still have to take care of yourself. You can't do it every damn day.
No, you don't do it every damn day. And like when you know those days are coming, like you take care of yourself into the lead-in and you take care of yourself through the day and then you take care of yourself through the recuperation to it. And I'm not having to be in bed for 17, 18 hours at a time on the weekends, right? And, you know, it's helping patients now. Does the acupuncture help with this? Yes, of course. Like the acupuncture can calm down the immune system.
Yeah, well, right? I mean, you had incredible things happen just having acupuncture. I mean, it's the first thing that opened you up to going, holy smokes, life could be different.
Yeah. You know, but I find that, you know, what I usually do with patients is I usually see them once a week for like 6 to 7 weeks. Now, if I was in California or, you know, one of the states where I could test, you better fucking believe I'd be testing like their tits off. Like I'd be testing like left, right, and sideways. I can't do that in New York. So my hands are a little tied here, but what I usually do is I usually work with them for like 6 weeks and then I try to take them down to once every 2 weeks. Once like the habits are there, once like they understand what they need to be doing, like once they're a little bit more self-sufficient and then we've stabilized some of the herbs. Like one of my favorite combos is Bujang Ichitong in the morning. Because remember, that's 28, like real Bujang like starts at 28 grams of Huangqi in it. Big ass dose, because what that does, and remember that old model we were talking about, right, with earth in the center. So that spleen, what the Bujang does is it flips the spleen, and then at night you give him Xiao Chai Hutong, because Xiao Chai Hutong starts to get it to spin.
Yeah,
and it takes a while.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I'm sitting here in my mind.
You can see
I'm
it, right?
I'm looking at the antique 5L, yeah. And it's like, oh yeah, there it is. And you were talking earlier in our conversation about that we got this thing and it needs to spin. The earth is what makes it, the friction of the earth is what makes it spin. And so here you are making the damn thing spin.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, when you're riding a bike and like you get the wheels set properly and then you lean into it and you kick with one foot to give that little push to the bike and then you pedal.
And then you're on. Right.
And then you're on. Right. Right? So that's what the Xiao Chai Hutong is.
Little push.
It's a little push. And if you've cleared the methylation pathways, like if you suspect that MTHFR thing, right? Which again, it's just that constitutional liver qi stagnation, liver blood deficiency. And you've done a little bit of amino work, like a little bit of supplement vitamin work. And then you throw them into the herbs, like they're going. They're going. They're off doing the Tour de France on
you
that
can
bike.
Switch
they're
them just from like, an Abby into a Betty.
Yeah, 100%. And it just, it takes patience, right? It takes patience and it takes time, but...
Totally worthwhile, though. And they can get a lot better than just, instead of just like persisting and, you know, trying to exist with what's going on.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, like the antibody game, if that's what we're going to call it, right? It's the gluten and it's the gua sha, like on the throat. Like those are the two big ones. Like if there's no other takeaway from like this conversation, those are like the two big things I want people to walk away with: the antibody game, gluten, and then the gua sha on the neck.
Okay, so this has been utterly delightful.
This is fun.
I'm both excited and jazzed, and like a little confused and disoriented because we've covered so much. And I kind of like that because it's like, oh, there's a big thing to look at here. And yet, because of the way you've described it, particularly in our Chinese medicine terms, it's like, oh, I think I can get a handle on this. If people want to get more information or they want to learn how to do this better, are there books? Are you teaching classes? What are resources people can get their hands on? Are there resources?
Not right now.
Okay.
And sorry.
Are you writing a book?
My students are forcing me to.
Good.
My students are forcing me to. There is a book out there written by Mark Ryan, who's an LAC. He approaches the thyroid from a five element standpoint. It's a very good book. It's a very, very, very good book. There's also, for like kind of primers, right? Susie Cohen wrote a book called Thyroid Health. She looks like a psychopath on the front because she's Botoxed her face and she's over smiling. And I refused to read that book forever because it's just like, I was like, your Shen ain't present here, honey. But it's one of the best books as like a primer, not just on Hachis, but on thyroid across the board. It's very, very good. If you want to get like kind of science-y, there's a book written by a guy named Datis Karazian. So Datis Karazian. And it's got like the world's like worst title. It's like, why do I still have thyroid symptoms, but my lab values are normal, blah, 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 blah. The copyright to that is the early aughts. It was one of the first books to hit the scene. But if you're going to read the Susie Cohen book first, because of how...
Just don't look at her picture.
Just don't look at the picture, right? Like, ignore the Botox. But how she primes and talks about the thyroid, right, is just, you know, feel like you walk away with a better lexicon and vocabulary around thyroid health from reading it. And then Karazian gets into kind of like the science of some of it. I've seen postulations out there that there's actually 21 different types of Hashimoto's. That comes back to the story of reading like the blood work.
Right. I was just thinking, you were saying you notice that there's different kinds of presentations based on what the blood looks like. So there's not just one type of Hashimoto's, which is already, I mean, that would be kind of mind-boggling to the Western medicine community, wouldn't it? To go, oh, there's more than one type. Yeah.
Yeah. But Karazian really gets into, you know, and he does do CEU. I don't know that you can get CEUs as ACUs, but he does do e-learning with things, with like gut health, brain health, connections, thyroid, all of it. He's absolutely like stupendous. And Mark Ryan studied with him for a long time. And Ryan was able to, in his book, was able to, from a five element standpoint, start to break some of it down. But yeah, like I'm hoping to do like more podcasts, hoping to do like, you know, even like little YouTube videos for people, because like the information needs to be out there because it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic.
It's all over the place. And when you were talking about the presentation of women as they're growing up and their menses isn't quite right, and then they get these headaches and then the skin and, oh, I'm anxious. And you're right. It is a significant population of people that we see. This is very, very everyday stuff. And to have the perspective, you know, it's like another handle to grab this thing with. This is super helpful.
Yeah, it's everyday stuff we don't need to be living with. In any field that if you're in for a long time, right, you start to get kind of bored with some of it. Like, I'm going to freely admit, like, I start to get bored with some of this, right, because I see it so often and it's so rote. However, the reason I haven't given up on it and the reason that I keep hammering at it is because other people need to be having this knowledge. They need to be treating, like other practitioners need to be treating like at this level with their patients. And I consider it a feminist issue. I consider it a feminist issue because so many women, men suffer from it too, but the majority are women. So many women are suffering that they don't have to. They don't have to.
Great. Heidi, thank you so much. This has been an absolute delight.
Oh, good.
Again, I'm a little
sorry if I totally like gave you a scrambled eggs for brains.
This is great. You know, I love it when my sense of what I think I understand gets a bit scrambled up, because it just means there's more to learn. Hopefully, I can help my patients better. And it's fun to talk to you. You're a badass.
Yeah.
You're like the total badass, man.
I try. Yeah. Listen, humans being hard, and you got to have a little bit of fun along the way, right?
You got it, sister.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate this.
I've attempted to read a couple of books now on thyroid and how all those hormonal interactions work with it. I've been pretty unsuccessful. I'm really grateful to Heidi for this particular conversation, because I feel like I understand the thyroid a bit better, at least enough to help my patients and to ask some questions from the Western point of view that might help me with my Chinese medicine thinking as well. So thanks so much for that today, Heidi. Hope that you all have enjoyed today's episode. A deep bow of appreciation and a heartfelt thank you to all of you who helped to support the podcast with a monthly
or yearly membership. Your contribution makes sure that this podcast reaches all of our ears on Tuesday mornings. If you'd like to help support the show, please visit the website and look under the Chiologician menu for more details. All right, friends, that's it for today. Please tune in again next week for another exciting adventure in all things geological.